Hello, fellow movie fans. I'm Lily Percy, and welcome to our last episode together. It feels so right that we end this podcast by talking about a movie that I love dearly, Love and Basketball, with the wonderful writer Liara Tamani. As always, if you haven't seen the movie, don't worry. We're going to give you all the details you need to follow along. Love and Basketball, written and directed by Gina Prince-Bythewood, is a movie that gets better and better with each viewing. The first time that I saw it, I was in college, and I was so struck by the relationship at the center of the movie, the love story. But the older that I get, the more that I marvel at all the things that I didn't see then. The way in which the character of Monica is a star and a role model for all of us as women, of what we can become even from a young age.
So how come you can play basketball?
I just can.
I never knew a girl that can play.
But my mama says she doesn't know where I come from because I act different.
Your dad play?
He works at a bank.
My dad plays for the Clippers. He says I'm gonna be a doctor or a lawyer, but I'm gonna play for them too. Same number and everything.
Well, I'm gonna be number 32, like magic.
He's all right. My dad can take him.
What was the most points your daddy ever got in junior high?
I don't know, a lot.
One game, Magic scored 48 points. They only had 6-minute quarters, and he sat out the whole fourth quarter.
You do act different.
I don't care.
Well, if anybody messes with you, just let me know, because I run the street.
The movie tells the story of Monica Wright, played by Sanaa Lathan, and Quincy McCall, Omar Epps, two neighbors who grow up next to each other, first as friends, sometimes as enemies and competitors on the basketball court, who over time start to see each other in new ways. They start to fall in love with each other. While Monica and Quincy are falling in love, they're also trying to navigate the pressures that come with trying to make a career out of something that they love, basketball. That's already stressful enough without the added pressures that their parents bring.
I think what your mother's trying to say is maybe it's time you start thinking about other things besides basketball.
What?
You got one game left and you haven't been recruited. Munchkin, I wanted this as bad as you did, but we have to face reality.
The coach from USC is going to be at the championship.
I know, but chances are...
Chances are there's still a chance.
If you would just listen to someone for a change, you'd realize you have a lot going for yourself. You're smart. You would be pretty if you do something to your head. You know, why you want to run out your hair looking like who shot John and forgot to kill him?
Parental pressure is something that the writer Liara Tamani knows very well. When she was growing up, she felt that she needed to become a lawyer, just like her father. She even went to Harvard and started law school, then saw Love and Basketball, and the movie completely changed her life. She realized watching it that this wasn't what was right for her, that she had to listen to herself, to listen to what her body was telling her, and to change her career. Well, I'm very excited, as I told you, to be here talking about a movie that I love, Love and Basketball. And I'm really, really excited to take you back in time to the year 2000. Mm. And I'd love for you to just close your eyes and think about where you were when you first saw that movie, how you were feeling, who you were with, any memories that come to mind. And I'm just going to ask you to do that for 10 seconds and I'll chime back in. So tell me what came to your mind.
That I was completely lost. I mean, it's like funny now, but it wasn't then.
Hmm.
And at the time, I mean, I wouldn't even have articulated it like that. I just knew that I was way more than sad. And it was my first time being in that place, a place I didn't know really how to name. But it was, I felt a deep darkness. I was living in Cambridge in my first year at Harvard Law School, but I did not want to be a lawyer. And I had known for years that I did not want to be a lawyer, even before I applied, really.
Wow.
But my father was a lawyer, and I was expected to follow in his footsteps. And really from a young age, I was a high achiever and I was like really very attached to that part of my identity. And so for me, lawyer, becoming a lawyer equaled guaranteed success.
Yeah.
You know, but I was starting to awaken to the reality that not being connected to what I loved came at a cost, you know, a huge cost, really, happiness. But, you know, going back to the theater, I was with my girls, I was with my friends, we were excited to see it. I mean, we were looking forward to it for weeks, you know, just because it was a love movie, you know, and a love movie featuring Black characters. But, you know, we had other Black love movies at the time, like Love Jones and even Brown Sugar. And we
Poetic
just looked
Justice. I remember Poetic Justice going with my girlfriends to see that. Yep.
So good.
Yeah.
But the familiar songs, I think of, when you say Poetic Justice, the braids, you know, the hairstyles.
Ooh, Tupac,
you know?
Yes.
Oh, Tupac. You know, the jokes, the outfits, the language, all of that, you know. And just seeing people, you know, who look like me, loved, being loved and loving other people up on the big screen. It was it's a big deal. And so, and I remember with Love and Basketball, Love and Happiness by Al Green playing even before the first shot was up on the screen. Love. That song played and I was like, ooh, it took me there. It's like it took me out of my misery and it just swept over me, the feeling of love, and made me just so ready to take it all in.
Yeah, there's such intention behind it, right? Because Gina chooses that song at the beginning as like it's kind of, you know, entryway into this childhood, right? The suburban childhood that these kids are experiencing.
Yes. And each scene unfolds, like, you know, the movie opens up and they're the kids are there and she walks over and wants to play ball with her neighbors. And, you know,
she's new to the neighborhood. They just
moved there. She's new to the neighborhood. Yeah.
Hey.
Hey.
Can I play?
No. You nice?
Yeah, I'm nice.
All right. You and Kelvin against me and Jamal.
They were like, okay, cool, you can play. But then when they see that she's a girl, she takes off her hat and she has long hair. They're like, oh, girls can't ball, whatever.
Oh, man, he is a girl. Man, girls can't play no ball.
Ball better than you.
What a dog.
She heard you.
Nuh-uh. She can only hear dog whistles.
Check
for you.
She dogged you, man.
Shut up.
One zip.
Lucky.
But then the song Candy Girl plays. New Edition's Candy Girl. But
so
she's
good.
Schooling them. Like, she schools them. Like, and I thought that was a perfect song. Throughout the movie, it's like song after song. MC Lights, you know, I think Light as a Rock, when she then is the older character, when she's Sanaa Lathan, and she's like schooling girls on the basketball court at school. The whole song, they're very, very intentional with the music, and it was a beautiful thing to experience for sure.
So it sounds like when you went to see it for that first time, you went really kind of to have this lovely celebratory experience with your girlfriends, and then what you experienced was really personal.
Yeah. What I was not ready for was the gym hiding inside of that romance. And really, it wasn't even hiding. It's at the center of the movie.
Yeah.
It's at the center of the movie. This girl who is going after her dreams. And, you know, my first year of law school, it's like that you're out of college and you're at that point where you're like, okay, this is not playtime anymore. When you're in college and it's school, it feels like school. It's like, you know, it could be a play thing. Oh, deciding you're going to study this or this. But I really started to look out into my future at that point and see misery. And I was like, I can't live like this. I was starting to get that feeling. But then who was going to drop out of law school? You know, who's about to do that?
Harvard, no less. People talk about Harvard like it's like the pinnacle thing you can achieve.
Exactly. Exactly. And so seeing Monica, you know, who very from the very beginning, you know, of the movie, you know, she knows what she wants and she is strong and aggressive and she is about going after it no matter what anybody else has to say about it. And that was a beautiful and inspiring thing. It was a message I really needed to hear at that time.
So, who you going to the dance with anyway? Spalding?
Who's Spalding?
See?
Stupid.
That's why you ain't getting recruited.
Who said I'm not getting recruited?
Your hot-ass temper, that's who.
I'm not the one who put this scar here when we were 11
here we go
years
again.
Old because he was about to lose.
You know what? Give me your best shot. Give me your best shot. I'm sick
Would
of you,
you
hanging
watch
this.
The damn road?
I'm watching the road. I'm sick of you hanging this over my head now. Come on, give me your best shot.
What? Don't tempt me. Don't tempt me. I'm warning you.
I'm warning you. If you don't stall that bad attitude, no one's gonna recruit you.
Please. You jump in some guy's face, you talk smack, and you get a pat on your ass. But because I'm a female, I get told to calm down and act like a lady. I'm a ball player, okay?
With a jacked up attitude.
Didn't know you cared so much.
I really don't.
Good.
I mean, you wrote about that in your really just beautiful essay for Time magazine called Love and Basketball Was More Than a Movie. It Changed My Whole Life. Very appropriate title.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about how you were feeling at that time when you first encountered Monica. And I love what you say here. You say, I'd become a master at taming, hiding, and cutting out the parts of myself that weren't compatible with the person other people wanted me to be. The rebellious, curious, and sexy parts, the questioning and fearless parts, the free parts. That mastery had led me to the most prestigious law school in the country, but I hated the sanitized, diminished version of myself. I was uncomfortable inside her, sad, confused, and anxious, and I was starting to get this terrifying sense that if I stayed in law school, I could get trapped in her the rest of my life.
Oh. That is exactly how I felt. It's funny, when you're growing up, people don't emphasize to you, hey, you and only you can create the life you want for yourself.
Yes.
You know, and watching Monica up on the screen, it kind of made me realize that. I mean, other things in my life at the time, just the misery too, was making me feel like that. But it's so basic, you know? But nobody ever emphasizes it. To most kids, I think, you know, adults like to tell kids what they expect them to do, you know, or what they think is right or what they think is good, instead of encouraging them to look on the inside of themselves or to figure out what they love. And when you are so focused, or when I was so focused on success, achievement, and worried about what other people would think of me, you know, if I dropped out or if I went down a path that was less traveled and less set up for, you know, the type of success that society thinks is successful. There was a great fear in departing from that, because it's about setting up a version of success for yourself, or defining success for yourself. Because it's easy for other people to look at you and say, oh, how good you've done or how successful you are. And it looks all good from the outside. But you cannot be successful if you are absolutely miserable.
Exactly. Exactly.
You cannot. So you have to start defining that for yourself. And I was just at that point where, you know, this motivated me to start doing that. I was already feeling like I have to, because, you know, when you get to that low point, it's like, I can't stay here. Like, I can't live here. I can't. My future cannot be here. You know, that's how I felt.
So why'd you give up ball?
Why do you keep sweating me on?
Because I don't get it. Man, I never knew a girl. I never knew anyone who loved ball as much as you.
Now all of a sudden you're gonna trade in your Nikes for a pair of shoes you can't even walk in. What's up?
Just leave it alone, all right?
All right.
Yeah, and one of the things that the movie shows, which honestly, I mean, like I'm your same age, and so I saw the movie and had this very all I focused on was a love story at the time. And it says a lot about I think where I was just thinking about the love story. And now rewatching it, preparing to talk to you, I realized that, as you said so beautifully, Gina Prince Bythewood, she was telling us this is actually what the story is about. It's about figuring out who you are and who you want to be at the core, right? And she does this through the character of Monica. And the thing that struck me is that both sets of parents, right? We have Monica's parents, and then we have Quincy's parents. So Omar Epps, who plays Quincy, both parents are trying to put their own insecurities and their own kind of fears and shame in the expectations that they set for their kids.
Oh, yes. And it's human.
You're a parent too. I'm so curious if that's something that strikes you.
It's funny because I grew up in the church, and so I grew up in a kind of a strict religious household. I was introduced to fear very early. And, you know, I kind of learned that, you know, the consequences of, you know, not obeying had severe consequences, hell, you know, essentially. And it's funny because I think that shaped me in so many ways. And so I'm the very opposite. You know, with my daughter, it's like, I want her to be free. I'm always encouraging her to do what she loves and to explore herself and to, you know, think about what she wants or think about what she enjoys. And even though I'm so very conscious of that, she still has people pleaser in her.
Yeah.
It's funny because I'm like, where do you get this from?
Yes.
I've worked really hard.
Yeah. Do we all have this as women? Is this just our lot? I don't know.
Right.
I know.
Yeah. But I think it is. It's like part of the human condition. It's like so many of us suffer from different insecurities or different fears. And if those fears and insecurities are alive within us, and especially if we are unaware of them, of course they're going to be passed on to our children. Of course, you know, we are going to be directing them and trying to direct them according to our fears and insecurities. I've spent a whole lifetime really trying to break free from fear, you know, so it is very important to me that my daughter not have that fear, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I so relate to that. I also grew up in the church, and that was my experience as well. And I feel like most of my adult life has been reminding myself not to be afraid.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's hard when it gets embedded in you in a sense. It's, you know, when your early self is constructed around it. Sometimes it's hard to remove that from you, you know, even as an adult, even when you recognize it and, you know, you're trying to fight against it and say, you know, no, I'm going to be free.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard.
It is. And when it's also coupled, and I don't know if this was your experience, but for me, it was also coupled with how to be a woman.
Oh, most certainly.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that even watching this movie now, I struggle with, you know, and I'm so glad that the message that comes out of it is that you are beautiful if you're wearing your hair up in a ponytail and you're wearing, like, you know, a basketball uniform. You don't have to be made up. I know that we have the scene where Monica is made over by her sister and she goes to prom and her mom for the first time tells her that she's beautiful. But even with that, the overall message of the movie is that she falls in love and she is loved just for who she is, not because of this kind of way of showcasing femininity, right? She's feminine simply by being who she is.
Yeah, I think it's such an important message. Maybe the ultimate message even is to do you, be you, to fight for what you love, even when it's hard, you know, even when you have to stand alone in yourself. That's the thing, because Monica has to stand alone in herself many a times when people don't believe in her. And it not only has to deal with, like, work, you know, or even her relationship, you know, in general, but I think it's relevant to every part of our humanity, you know, what we believe and what we value. It's important to be able to stand in the truth of yourself and to be able to fight for that,
yeah.
you know, even when it's unpopular or, you know, other people disagree with you. But it's hard. It's hard, like we said, because, you know, as human beings also, as much as we say, oh, I don't care what anybody thinks. You know, those people, when you say that, it's like, it's so not true,
like,
though.
Nope, I really yeah, do care a lot.
Exactly.
I wish I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's something about the struggle that you and the pain that you were going through that you described, you know, back in your freshman year, that was necessary to your own, I mean, I hate using the word journey now because it sounds so silly when people use it, but it was really necessary
yeah.
to your own journey. And I think
Absolutely.
About for Monica, you know, breaking up with Quincy, the person mm-hmm. that she loved the most in her life outside of her family, going and playing basketball in the women's league in Europe. Because at the time, this is the other thing that blew my mind. At the time, the WNBA didn't exist.
No.
Yeah. Because right? this movie set in the mid-90s.
Yeah, it formed right at the end. And
exactly.
she added it right at the end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing to think about that. So she goes to Europe and she's so lonely. She's a superstar playing in Spain. People know her on the street. People come up to her. You know, she has in so many ways the dream that she's always wanted, but she's completely alone. And she's going through such a difficult period in her life that ultimately helps her to understand what it is that's missing, right?
Right.
And I think about yourself and what you had to go through in order to really understand your identity as a writer.
Yeah, for Monica, it's like with her choosing herself over Quincy. I think, you know, everybody will probably have to, I don't know, it's like, it's not going to be that stark. It's, you know, drama, it's the movie. It's like me or basketball, which is what he was asking her at the time.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and of course she should choose herself.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody's asking you that, you know.
But that was also kind of radical because when I watch it now, I'm like, this dude was being set up to play in the NBA. Right. And he actually ends up leaving college to go play for the Lakers. And, you know, there's a competition to their relationship, too, around it.
Yeah.
But unlike a lot of relationships that I normally see between men and women, where it's kind of expected that the woman would just say, OK, no, honey, we're going to follow your career. We're going to do what you need. She says, no, I'm going to keep playing.
Can we talk?
Talk to your new girlfriend.
Look, I took the whole of Burger King.
Cheap date.
You she had time for me.
So you messed around to prove a point?
What'd I just say? You know, you got your head so far up your ass, it took a cheap date for you to notice me.
What cue, man? Did I forget to kiss your ass like everybody else?
You forgot to be there.
That night you wanted to talk about your dad. I had curfew. What was I supposed to do?
Stay.
If I stayed, I wouldn't be starting.
Well, at least you got your priorities straight.
I never asked you to choose.
You never have to.
I'm a ball player. If anybody knows what that means, it should be you.
If basketball is all you care about, why are you boning me? Why don't you bone Dick Vitale?
How do I know the next time you're feeling neglected or whatever, you're not gonna just run around on me? If we're gonna be together, I have to be able to trust you.
I'm not asking for us to be together.
What?
I'm going through a lot of shit right now. It's obviously more than you got time for.
How are you gonna tell me what I have time for? I mean, whatever I did, we can fix this.
I don't think so. Look, I'm entering a draft.
What?
I'm going pro. Man, who knows where I'm gonna end up, you know?
When did you decide all this?
A few days ago.
So that's it? Just forget about you and me?
I still like us to be friends.
Friends.
Yeah, and that's a part of her strength, and that's a part of her recognizing her worth and recognizing the importance of her dreams. You know, part of knowing where she wants to go and how important it is for her to get there. A huge part of her character, you know,
yeah,
that Gina Prince-Bythewood wrote she was hugely inspirational in that way, to see such a strong woman, a strong girl. I don't think I'd ever, before that point, I really don't think I'd ever seen a character like her on the screen. I mean, and the fact that she was female and that she was Black, you know, and I wasn't using words like, you know, representation or feminism back then. But it's like, you feel the energy just the same. You know, I felt empowered. I felt seen. This girl who is like, she's going to fight for what she wants, you know, under any circumstances. And, you know, she has to go through it. And, you know, like you said, when she went on to play overseas, you know, it's probably not just Quincy she was missing. It's like her friends and family from home. And we all have to balance that, I think, with our careers and our work. It's not the only thing. Work is not the only thing. You know, our families are important. Our whole lives, the totality of our lives, we have to work to balance that to achieve happiness.
Yeah. I think it's the connection to yourself that you're describing, right?
Because you can certainly lose, the connection to yourself when things get out of whack.
Yes.
For sure.
So how did you go from, you know, watching this movie, realizing I can't keep doing this, I can't go down the path to be a lawyer, and then dropping out of Harvard? Like, what was the trajectory in your mind and the steps that led you to ultimately embracing your identity as a writer?
Yeah, I mean, it was a long path. It wasn't, because I didn't even know I wanted to be a writer, you know, when I was in law school. I had no idea what I wanted to be. That was part of the problem, because it wasn't like, let me leave law school to do this big, great thing.
Exactly.
It was like, let me leave law school and then tell people I don't know what I'm going
to
do.
Yeah, it's so good for you to say that, because I think a lot of times, especially when you're like a teenager, you just assume there's going to be like these very concrete steps that you can take and you'll just suddenly know things. And
no.
Even seeing this movie, you know, there's the way in which like, she always knew she wanted to be a basketball player. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, very few of us actually have that.
it's very unrealistic. No, in real life, for most of us, it's just putting one foot in front of the other and taking one step and then another toward the things you love and the direction of the things you love. And I had to try on many things. And along the way, the things that I tried on, I still incorporate them in my life. You know, along the way, you know, to becoming a writer, I worked in marketing, which, I mean, I guess I have to incorporate it for my writing, but I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy the marketing aspect. I worked in marketing, but then I also taught yoga. I taught dance, which was, I mean, yoga and dance are a huge part of my life now. Mm. I was also... I arranged flowers, you know, which I love still arranging flowers. I worked for an interior design company. And so along the way to getting to writing, I also discovered other parts of myself. It wasn't in vain, you know, all these different things. It's just going into the direction, in the direction of things you love, you'll discover things about yourself. And without having the bravery to at least move in that direction, that discovery doesn't take place.
You asked me what was missing.
What?
From basketball.
You woke me up to tell me that?
It's not fun for me anymore because you're missing. What I'm trying to say is, I've loved you since I was 11. And the shit won't go away.
We haven't talked since college. You wait 2 weeks before my wedding to tell me something like that.
I know, I probably should have said it 2 weeks ago.
You haven't changed. You still think the sun rises and sets on your ass. Well, guess what? It doesn't.
Then why are you so upset?
Because you don't pull this shit on someone who's about to get married.
Better late than never. Right?
Wrong.
I'll play you.
What?
One game, one-on-one.
For what?
Your heart.
You're out of your mind.
So what, you gonna bitch up?
Huh. What's that supposed to be, some psychology?
Look, I know why you broke up with me in college. And not that it wasn't messed up. But I should have been there for you. I just didn't know how to do that and be all about ball.
Monica, After that stuff with my dad, I couldn't trust anybody, okay? I was lost. That was 5 years ago. I've moved on.
Prove it.
What will this prove?
You once said the reason I beat you was because you wanted me to.
So?
So? If I win, it's because deep down you know you're about to make the biggest mistake of your life. And deep down, you want me to stop you.
And what happens when you lose?
If I lose, I'll buy you a wedding present.
I'd love to talk about your favorite things about the movie. And really, this could go on forever because I, much like yourself, I love the movie. For me, I can't go any further without just talking about Sanaa Lathan, who I absolutely love. I mean, as an actor, she does this for me in every role that she takes on. Even when the movies aren't very good, she's still fantastic. But she holds both confidence and strength alongside vulnerability.
Yeah.
In a way that just literally leaves me speechless each time that I watch her. And I just fall further in love with her. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why, you know, no matter what the dialogue is, she just brings such depth to it. And there's a line in the movie that I feel like summarizes so much of what we've been talking about when she says, when you're a kid, you see the life you want and it never crosses your mind that it's not going to turn out that way. And again, I don't think anyone else delivering that line would have been able to give it the depth that she does. It's just so much who Sanaa Lathan is. I'm just curious, like, what are the scenes or lines that stand out to you, even after all these years, after 20-something years of watching this movie?
Some of my favorite scenes. I definitely love the first kiss scene when they're kids.
Yes.
When Quincy decides to ask Monica to be his girlfriend.
Yes.
And then they count to five on, well, he counts to five on his hand while they kiss. And I love how short-lived it is because he's oh, now you have to ride on the back of my bike. And she's like, no, I'm riding my own bike.
Yeah.
And then a fight breaks out. I love that scene. That's
me
a
too.
Really good scene.
Oh, it's so good.
You want to be my girl?
What do I have to do?
I guess we can play ball and ride to school together. When you get mad at me, I gotta give you flowers.
But I don't like flowers.
Oh.
How about Twinkies? My mom won't ever buy them.
Okay.
Okay.
I think we gotta kiss now.
For how long?
5 seconds.
Not out here.
Over there, then. Ready? Cause you're my girl now, you gotta ride on my bike.
But I wanna ride my own bike.
My dad always drives my mom.
So?
So that means I have to ride you. Come on!
I don't have to do what you say.
Forget you then, stupid.
You stupid, and your dad plays for the worst team in the NBA.
What?
Last time they won, Dr. J was a nurse.
Shut up! I don't wanna be your boyfriend anymore, you ugly dog.
Why don't I be your girlfriend, big head?
Well, I feel like we can't talk about our favorite scenes without talking about the end scene. I mean,
okay,
that scene to this day, it's so groundbreaking and unexpected. And even though I've seen this movie at least like probably 8 times, I'm always caught off guard by the fact that, you know, Gina Prince-Bythewood decided to write a scene in which the woman is the star, and she's watching her man take care of their kid.
And this is 20 years ago.
I know.
Yes.
When have we seen that since?
Yes. When? Yeah, I don't even know. But yeah. No, I love the way that ended because it's like she fought for what she wanted and she got what she wanted. She has her career, you know, and she has her family and she has her man supporting her. And yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, you write about it in that same essay for Time. You say, at the end of the movie, Monica's running onto the court in a Los Angeles Sparks uniform with Quincy cheering her on from the sidelines. She's living a life of her own, one she created. It took dismissing the pressures from everyone else and standing strong in herself. Not easy, but possible.
Oof, yes. I mean, I distinctly remember, it's like at the end, after seeing that, I felt like literally when she turned around and looked at, you know, Quincy and their child, I almost felt like, you know, she was reaching through the screen asking me, so what you about to do?
Yes.
Like, I got here, you know, so what you about to do? You're going to try to work on where you want to go, you know? No, it's very powerful. It's a very powerful scene indeed.
So I'm curious, as we end our conversation, you know, I'm sure you've seen this movie many more times since that first time. Mm-hmm. How has it changed for you as you've gotten older, you know, as you've become this, you become a mother, first of all, but you've also become so many other things as part of your identity, including a writer. I'm just curious how you've both grown together, you and Love and Basketball.
Yeah, I would say, you know, now that I'm a writer, I have an appreciation for Gina Prince Bythewood as an artist, you know, as a storyteller. I just took the movie in the first time I saw it. I wasn't thinking about the director or the writer. I wasn't thinking about any of that. But as a baller herself, you know, she balled growing up. You know, she was sharing her own truth with that movie.
Yes.
Which
it's
is
one
a
of the
beautiful,
reasons why it's so sincere.
It rings that way. It rings that way. Yes. Truth always rings. You always feel it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Definitely looking back, I'm grateful for to be able to see her intention. And every time I watch the film, I watched it last week just to get ready again for this interview. And every time I ask myself, you know, how can I be more free?
Mm.
You know, how can I shape my life according to what I love even more? And I absolutely love that film begs that question, that it asks that question of me.
I love that. It's just like you ended your essay, because you said in your essay, don't think I'm preaching this message from the mountaintop. I'm still working to be free, still learning how to live outside of fear as I shape my professional space as an author. But for me, Monica Wright will always be a shining example of what's possible when we have the courage to stand alone in the truth of ourselves.
You make that sound so good.
No, those are your words. Those are your words. I feel like we got to, like, what song would we cue up right here for you? What would be the perfect song to cue up for freedom?
Just love and happiness, because that is what it's about. It's like figuring out what you love. That's freedom. You know, living towards what you love, that's freedom. You know, worrying about your happiness instead of the expectations and opinions of others, that's freedom.
Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone, 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
Liera Tamani is a writer and proud Harvard Law School dropout. She's the author of the books All the Things We Never Knew and Calling My Name. Her lovely essay for Time magazine, which inspired this conversation, is called Love and Basketball Was More Than a Movie. It Changed My Whole Life. 40 Acres and a Mule Filmworks produced Love and Basketball, and the clips you heard in this episode are credited entirely to them. The songs you heard in this episode were Love and Happiness by Al Green, courtesy of High Records, Candy Girl by New Edition, courtesy of Warlock Records, and Soul Sista by Bilal, courtesy of Interscope Records. The team behind This Movie Changed Me is
Gautam Srikishan,
Chris Hegel,
Eddie Gonzalez,
Lillian Vo,
Christiane Wartell,
Tony Liu,
and Kristen Lin.
Special thanks to Grace J. Kim, who created the beautiful artwork for all of our episodes this season. This podcast is produced by On Being Studios, which is located on Dakota land. And we also produce other podcasts you might enjoy, like On Being with Krista Tippett, Poetry Unbound, and Becoming Wise. Find those wherever you like to listen, or visit us at onbeing.org to find out more. I'm Lily Percy. This is our last episode of This Movie Changed Me, and I want to say thank you. Thank you for listening, for your emails, for your support, and for learning and growing alongside us. It has been a joy for our team to make this for all of you. As one of my prophets, Roger Ebert, famously said, "I'll see you at the movies."
This podcast is produced by On Being Studios in Minneapolis, Minnesota.